Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I am going to talk this morning about the evolutionary argument for Buddhism. And I'm sorry if this is more of a TED talk than a Dharma talk, but I think there'll be a little of both, and it's something that I've been really interested in for a long time. And so my thesis is that the teachings of evolutionary psychology support Buddhist teachings about the human condition and about why we are the way we are, which is, I think, is the basic question about life. Michael Scott asked Toby, why are you the way that you are? And my daughter asked me frequently, why are you so mean? And Buddhism has teachings about why we are the way that we are, and evolutionary psychology has teachings about why we are the way we are. And I think they kind of come at it from different ways, but they're kind of getting at the same ideas. So basic Buddhist teaching is that we have a vague sense of something is off. The sense in Buddhist terminology will be dukkha, the sense of dissatisfaction, both small, like our to-do list, and big, like everyone we know, including us, is going to die. We have this basic sense of something's a little out of kilter. And Buddhist teaching is that there's a cause for this, and the main cause is delusion. And the teaching is that the delusion is that we break up the reality that is here, that's just this, into different things with our thoughts, with our ideas. So we break up reality into various components, and the main component is me and everything else out there. So it's this really strong sense of I that we all have. And once you have the sense of I, then you have greed and anger, because when you have a sense of I, then you want stuff for this I, you want good things, and that's greed, and you don't want bad things. So you get angry. Like, how many people here heckled a police officer on the way to the Zen Center this morning? Yeah, I mean, that's, we have one comrade. That is the delusion of anger. And Buddhist teaching is that we have this, we suffer unnecessarily because of our unrealistic view of the world, because that this breaking things up isn't the way things really are. Now, in a sense, it really is the way that the way things are. We are all individuals. Obviously, we all are born and we die, and we have to live this way, and that's true. But there's this other viewpoint at which that is more, that is a delusion. And Buddhist teaching is any fixed view of what this is necessarily delusion, because your ideas are going to be breaking up reality into various ideas and thoughts, which are never going to capture reality as it is. So we chant that delusions are inexhaustible. And it seems like we are hardwired for delusion. And so a basic conundrum is, if it's delusion, why is it so real? Why does it feel so real? There's nothing more basic to being human than the sense of being something separate, of the sense of I. So basic that, like, Descartes didn't even realize he was making this assumption when he said, I think, therefore I am. And so if it's a delusion, why are we so captured by it? Why is it so automatic? So there's an answer from evolutionary psychology. So the Yogacharans were trying to figure this out, and they were doing their thing, and now we have math and science and stuff, and so we have evolutionary psychologists figuring it out. We have Charles Darwin, we have neo-Darwinists. We know a lot more from the scientific point of view, and they have an answer. So their answer is that delusion is an evolutionary adaptation formed by natural selection. And natural selection favors and benefits our genes, not us. And here's the interesting point, which is natural selection favors delusion, not reality. And I'm making air quotes around reality for the recording. And Zen Buddhist teaching has an answer to this problem of delusion that we're hardwired for, which is zazen and compassion. So I'm going to now try to unpack this stuff. It's going to be a quick talk, and we're not going to have time for questions. So everyone will be confused when we're done, including me. So the basic idea of natural selection is that you have replicators, things that make copies of themselves. And some of them turn out to be different, so not exact copies. And if the replicators are a little bit different, and that difference provides an advantage in making more copies, over time, there'll be more of those replicators. And it's just math. Okay? So, for living things, the replicators are genes. And genes are just the portions of our chromosomes that make copies of themselves. So the current thinking in evolution is that natural selection operates at the level of genes, first and foremost. Not people, not species. Who benefits is the gene, because it's the gene that's being copied and selected for future copies. Okay? So our genes make proteins. They contain instructions for making proteins, including the human cells that make our bodies. So the genes say, under these circumstances, make this protein. So it's interdependent with the environment at the time. It's not like deterministic. This gene means you're going to be this way. But it is related. So your genes are, in some sense, programming your cells to be created. They're instructions for your cells, all of the cells in your body. And the genes make copies of themselves. So each cell in your body has a nucleus with 26 pairs of chromosomes, and for almost everyone, they're all identical. Except for your gametes. If you're a male, you have sperm cells, which only have one string of 26 chromosomes. Female has an egg with one string of 26 chromosomes. They get together some magic way, I'm not really sure. They unite, and they start making copies of, now they have 26 pairs of chromosomes, and they're making copies. And eventually they're making brains and eyes, nervous systems, our sensory systems. They're instructions for our bodies. So from the viewpoint of evolutionary psychology, our bodies are vehicles for our genes to make copies of themselves. And we are survival mechanisms for our genes. We are a trick that our genes figured out to make copies of themselves. They didn't really figure it out, but that's what happened with natural selection. Some genes wound up making, I'm not going to explain the history of life, but here we are. So, natural selection selects genes that are good at making copies of themselves. And it works at the level of genes. And this is what's called the selfish gene theory. It doesn't mean we have genes for being selfish. It just means that it's the genes that are being selected. So natural selection is looking at what benefits the genes, not what benefits us or our species. Okay? So another point is that our minds have evolved through natural selection. And the way this happened was that our genes made our brains, or have the instructions for our brains, and for our nervous system, for our sensory system. So some genes created bodies and minds that are like this, and they had a benefit in our ecological niche of being human. Other genes succeeded in other ways, but ours succeeded by making our bodies and minds. It's not exactly clear how minds are related to brains, and we're not going to solve the hard problem of consciousness, but I think we can all agree that our minds are somehow connected to our brains, right? Like if you have a brain injury, it's going to affect your mind. So in a very real sense, by making instructions creating brains, our genes are creating our minds. You can have genes for minds, and by mind I also mean our emotions, for feeling certain ways and for believing certain ways. And if you don't believe this, think about how do birds every generation, how do geese fly south every generation? How do beavers build dams? They don't go to school. There are genes for building dams, and the dam is like a phenotype for a certain gene. In a sense, our genes created our bodies and minds, and our genes were selected for creating these bodies and minds. And a key point is that scientists say that our minds have our minds play a big role in creating the world out there. The world that we perceive or that we consider to be out there is largely created by our minds and our brains. It's not the case that we get raw sensory data that our eyes can interpret and create and can see objects out there. There's not enough data hitting our retina. So our brains have to do a lot of work to create this reality out there. Our brains have to create three-dimensional objects in space. There's not enough data hitting our eyes to know the borders between things and what are separate objects, what's foreground and what's background. Our brains have to determine how far away things are. Is something really close and big or far away and small? The data hitting your eyes can't tell you that. It's an insolvable question. Our brains have to figure out if something is light or dark. Is it snow in a dark room or a piece of coal in sunlight? The data hitting your eye can't tell if it's white or black. It could be either. So our brains are operating in the background and provide these assumptions that cause us to see what we see and perceive what we see. Okay. And it's all going on in the background without our really noticing it. So we just see three-dimensional objects and we see what we see, but it's actually our mind is supplying these assumptions that create our perceptions. And that's why optical illusions work. They're playing with the hidden assumptions in our mind to make us, and then you realize, whoa, that's not really what's out there. So the assumptions that our mind uses to create our perceptions of this world out there, these assumptions were developed through natural selection on our genes. And for a long time, people thought, well, since natural selection has operated to forge our minds, what we perceive must be really close to objective reality. Because if you were misperceiving things out there, you would lose. You would have a disadvantage. If you didn't notice the tiger, you would be eaten. So people thought that, evolutionary psychologists thought, the fact that our brains and minds were selected by natural selection and our adaptations shows that we are perceiving an objective reality out there. We're pretty close. So when we see things in geometric space, where it's an accurate representation of reality, because otherwise we wouldn't have been selected to see that. But then, it doesn't really make sense when you think about it. But that's the view of like Steven Pinker in his book How the Mind Works, and it was an accepted view. But then, there's a cognitive psychologist, Donald Hoffman, who says, that's not true. And so I'm just going to read parts of what Donald Hoffman says, because it sounds like the Dharma. But he is a cognitive scientist, and he says that he uses evolutionary game theory to show that our perceptions of an independent reality must be illusions. He's a professor of cognitive science at the University of California, Irvine. He spent the last 3 decades studying perception, artificial intelligence, evolutionary game theory, and the brain. And his conclusion is a dramatic one. The world presented to us by our perceptions is nothing like reality. What's more, we have evolution itself to thank for this illusion, as it maximizes evolutionary fitness by driving truth to extinction. So then the magazine says, they ask them, people often use Darwinian evolution as an argument that our perceptions accurately reflect reality. They say, obviously, we must be latching onto reality in some way, because otherwise we would have been wiped out a long time ago. If I think I'm seeing a palm tree, but it's really a tiger, I'm in trouble. And his response is, evolution has shaped us with perceptions that allow us to survive. But part of that involves hiding from us the stuff we don't need to know. And that's pretty much all of reality. Whatever reality might be. So, and he gives an example of computers, like if you see a blue file icon on your desktop, all you know about it is it's blue and it's in the corner of your desktop and it's a file. And none of that is true. It's not an accurate description of what's really there. You can't know the true nature of the file from looking at the desktop. But perceiving the file as being there, as being this blue file in the corner of your desktop, is useful. And you can use it to guide your behavior. And it's actually hiding a more complex reality of, I'm not a computer scientist, but I understand it's like electrons and bits and all this stuff. That's really going on there. There really isn't a blue file on your desktop. But it's more advantageous to see the blue file than it is to understand all the workings that are going on with electromagnetism. So that's his metaphor for how natural selection could favor delusion. So he says, the classic argument is that those of our ancestors who saw more accurately had a competitive advantage over those who saw less accurately, and thus were more likely to pass on their genes that coded for more accurate perceptions. So, after thousands of generations, we can be quite confident that we're the offspring of those who saw accurately, and so we see accurately. That sounds very plausible, but I think it is utterly false. It misunderstands the fundamental fact about evolution, which is that it's about fitness functions, mathematical functions that describe how well a given strategy achieves the goals of survival and reproduction. The mathematical physicist, Mr. Prakash, proved a theorem that I devised that says, according to evolution by natural selection, an organism that sees reality as it is will never be more fit than an organism of equal complexity that sees none of reality but is just tuned to fitness. Never. So then he's asked, how can a false reality be beneficial? They help us survive. He's asked, so everything we see is an illusion? No, we've been shaped by these perceptions. We have to take them seriously. If I see something that looks like a snake, I have to consider it a snake. it's a logical flaw to think that we have to take it seriously, that these perceptions, we have to take them literally. And he says, our perceptions of independent objects have no objective observer independent features. The snake I see is a description created by my sensory system to inform me of the fitness consequences of my actions. Evolution shapes acceptable solutions, not optimal ones. A snake is an acceptable solution to the problem of telling me how to act in a situation. So, my thesis is that this dukkha, this delusion of the sense of I, is an adaptation by our genes. Genes that created bodies and minds that didn't have the sense of I that needs to be protected and helped are going to be at a disadvantage from other genes. If you thought everything was fine and you have no to-do list and you didn't feel like getting out of bed today, genes for creating bodies and minds like that do not have an adaptation advantage. Genes that create bodies and minds that worry about their to-do list, that worry about what people think about them, those genes have an adaptative advantage. They're going to be better at making copies of people. But it's not necessarily good for us. So, I'm running out of time, so I'll cut to the chase. Good news and bad news. Bad news is that delusions are inexhaustible. We're hardwired for them. It's in our DNA. But the good news is, we're so smart, our evolutionary niche is thinking and information, that we've figured out a way to deal with our programming, which is zazen and compassion. You can let go of the delusion. You don't have to be caught by it. You can let go of it and return to just this. And as you continue with this practice, it becomes easier and easier, and you're less and less caught by the delusion. So, when you get angry at the police officer who was rude to you, you heckle him with compassion and a sense of humor. So we have, that's basically my talk. 2 minutes if anyone has a question.
Ben? Even those of us who know what's behind the blue file icon... don't think of everything that's behind it. You may think of it as a blue file icon because it's just easier.
Right. There's no advantage to thinking about that stuff. So there's no advantage to thinking... I mean, there's no genetic advantage to being enlightened. There is a genetic advantage to being deluded. But it doesn't feel good.
So. But that, I suppose, will be... We evolve too slow. But if someone were to eventually build an artificial intelligence that was able to do all of the thinking behind the file icon in a functionally instantaneous way for everything that it did, in and out, all kinds of processes, the question is, would it enlighten itself instantaneously, and then what would it do with itself? Because there is a functional limit to what our brains can do, biologically, organically, physiologically, but probably not for a system of such complexity. And so the question would be, what would it do with itself?
Right. We don't want enlightened robots. I think it would be dangerous. We have to program them with the proper emotion to worship us. Okay, so I am out of time. Thank you for listening to my talk.